Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am your host, Rob Oliver, and it is my privilege to be with you today. And I tell you guys this all the time. I run into fantastic people. I meet amazing individuals. And today is kind of one of those fun stories that I just got to share it with you, okay? My smart person today is Sean Lardo. He is right here from Pittsburgh. And let me just kind of, let's start with this. First, Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rob, for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. And let's start with this. Can you tell the story about how you and I got introduced? Because I think this is it's a fun backstory on the whole thing.
Totally agree. Yes, I was fortunate enough to learn of you originally, my eldest daughter, Diana, one of my pride and joys. She works at a compression clinic. She actually one day comes up to me and says, "Hey, I have this patient of ours." And by the way, she, as I mentioned before, she's a raving fan of yours, regardless of even not the podcast or anything, but just the interaction that you have with her. She finds you to be absolutely amazing. So let's take it away from smart people to amazing people, because that's how she sees you. And so she tells me about you, you know, "I have this guy, you know, named Rob Oliver. He actually has some medical issues," and she didn't get into details, of course, because she's not allowed to, but she says, "I talked to him while he comes in. He has his daughters. We talk about that. And I told him about you and how you have four daughters, Dad." And, you know, and then it came about to where she mentioned your podcast. And I said, I started researching you too, to see what you were about too, because I was very curious. But she said, she's spoken to you so many times, and she has such an affection towards you based off of the way you are, that I had no choice but to meet you regardless. So I went on, I filled out a form. I said, "I'd love to talk to you." I really had no intention of any other thing other than saying, "Hey, I'm Diana's dad. Let's talk."
Right. Well, okay. And just so my experience with, you know, going to the compression clinic, dealing with Diana, and she's an amazing individual anyway. And she's like, "Oh, my dad would be a great guest." So we're both getting, like, she's a raving fan of apparently both of us, which is,
you know,
if no one else listens today, Diana will listen to this episode and be like, "This is the best episode of Learning from Smart People ever." Because it's got two people.
Well, she has no choice. She has no choice but to listen. She's my daughter. I'm like, "You have to listen to my podcast."
Exactly. So let me just kind of give an introduction for who you are. Because you talked about this a little bit. You are the father of four daughters. You are a decorated veteran, which, thank you for your service. This is what it's what makes our country great, and it's what keeps our country free. So thank you for that. You are a natural born leader, a perpetual student, and an expert in brand development. You are an advisory board member at Train Our Troops. You are the VP of partner development at OITVOIP, which you swim in alphabet soup, apparently. Basically you're looking to try and turn partner prospects into long-term friends. So this is great. Let's take a switch from the personal side of things and let's talk about business. Let's talk about it. Well, let me just talk about this. You were in the armed services. You were in the Army, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, 9 years.
Okay. So in that experience, that's got to be a real learning opportunity for you. Are there things that, I say the question, are there things that you learned there, knowing that there are? So what are the things that you learned from your experience in the Army?
Oh, my Lord. One thing you learn immediately is, well, I use humility a lot in my conversations. I use the word humility because, and it's not, some people take it as a negative connotation, but I think you can't have progress without discomfort, which requires you to have humility, because you have to know, I don't know anything until I experience it. I want to get in the room with the smartest people. But in the Army, I learned it from day one. Like, you know, they have a great, I went in 18 years old. I thought I was a man. I learned I was not a man. I learned I was learning to become a man. And so, which was really nice, because it gave me a progression and it set me on a trajectory to actually start to push myself. There were things that I didn't think I could do ever. like ever. I mean, I obviously I loved watching Rambo with my age. I was like, oh, I want to be this guy. I'm gonna tie this red thing around my head, bandana around my head, and hold my hair up, which I don't need anymore. But I was like thinking I would do all this, and or I think I was watching and thinking I would never do this. And you know, I get there, and really, the Army puts really strong core values in. You know, they talk about loyalty. They talk about, you know, your development as yourself. I mean, part of it is really about respect, selfless service. My goodness, personal courage. I mean, these are very serious things about yourself. I think everything starts internally before you can externalize it. You have to be yourself. You have to live it. You have to embody a lot of it. You know, I always make the analogy of you're on a plane and they say, if something can happen and the oxygen masks come down, put yours on first, then your family's.
Right.
And people are like, no, do your, no. Cause if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of the rest.
Sure.
And that's it.
Yeah. Wait, so talk to me about your definition of humility, because a lot of times I think people have a mistaken understanding of what humility is. And they just say, like, you know, if I say bad things about myself, that makes me humble, or if I think poorly of myself, then I'm humble. But what's your definition of humility?
Yeah, I can see why people think that, but no, you know, again, as I mentioned, I put myself in the room with the smartest people, right? I know I go in thinking I have a ton to learn from every, regardless of age, even using my daughters, I learn from them. So to me, humility is knowing that I don't have every answer today and knowing that I would strive to get that answer and improve myself and improve the people around me. That's humility.
Yeah. So humility is not thinking less of yourself, but it's realizing that you have areas where you can improve. None of us is perfect. None of us has it all. And so I would imagine that being in the Army, you understand that the Army is not an army of one. It's an army of, there's a ton of people in the Army. And in some ways, everyone has their own skill set, but they're, I don't want to say this unkindly, but they're interchangeable parts, right?
Absolutely. No, you're right.
Makes a lot of sense. There's another thing that you mentioned in there that I want to highlight, and that is selfless service. Talk to me about that idea, and what does it mean to you?
Oh my goodness. So first off, everything that we have a limited time on the planet, and we have finite responsibilities that are awesome. And you have some serious responsibilities. Of course, you have some stresses in life. You have everything. We have all those, but selfless service, if I can help anybody with anything that I can share or help them get along or get ahead or connect people or whatever it may be, selfless service about doing something for somebody else, not asking for any reward at all.
Yeah. That expectation that I'm doing this without expectation of reciprocation, without expectation. It's interesting to me because you do it in some ways without expectation of return, but knowing that there is always a return on investment with that, and you know, which is amazing. To me, as you invest in relationships, as you invest in other people, you share yourself with them, and absolutely, you become part of their life, and you have a legacy of what is their accomplishment and their ability to succeed. And I guess that's in some ways where you transition this and you say, okay, I'm working to help people be successful. I'm working to help people lead successful lives, but you're also doing the same thing in business to try and, to help businesses be successful. And I'm not saying that we have to be completely selfless in this, because you've got to earn a living and doing that's important as well. But let's talk about that transition of, okay, as you're helping businesses succeed, what is your definition of success for a business?
That's a great question, actually. One of the big things that I've learned, and I've been part of five different startup companies in my life. I've worked in corporate America, so I was at enterprise level, and I enjoyed, I learned a lot of stuff from there. But being involved, coming down to the trenches, so to speak, with startup software companies and whatnot, and working with them has been first off eye opening for me. We'll talk about humility. My Lord, you know, you think you have all the answers until you're there. And so when it comes down to working with them, how, to me, success, of course, we can talk about revenue, because revenue is what you're there for, right? You're there to grow this business. Like you said, we're in it to get something out of it, which is usually that, which is to sustain my life. But it's also about the people around you and the culture. I think culture is something that's overlooked so many times, so easily, because, and again, when you're in the thick of it, you're thinking, how do we move forward? How do we get successful? What does it take? And you get in that box. You sometimes forget that everybody else around you needs to feel the same way you feel. They have to buy in with you. They have to love it as much as you love it. So I never go into a company as an employee. I go in as a family member, as a partner, as a, I'm there with you. Even if I'm not an owner of the business, you know, I go in as a family, a friend. You're relying upon me as much as I'm, and this is something I learned in the Army. So to me, success is really comes down to the culture, the people, how they feel about it. Do they believe in what's going on? Do they feel proud of their own accomplishments? And then from there, you know, back to the selfless service, I'm working with so many individuals, younger people, even older people, and I get to watch them being developed and to have their own success. And back to selfish, you know, selfish motivation wise, I get to watch these people develop and grow, and I still feel good. That's my ROI.
Right. So I'm processing this, and I'm thinking that, all right, what you're looking at in the Army, you're doing personal development, right? Where you're pushing your own limits, you're expanding your own capabilities. And when you get into business, you're looking at much the same thing where it's business development and you're looking to find out what are the limits? How do we push the envelope absolutely. From a business perspective? Is that an accurate understanding?
Oh, absolutely. Companies that bring me on to stretch and push. They know that's what's going to happen. They love it. And then they dislike it. Cause just like, if you're going to the gym and working out, it's rough, you know? I mean, you know, you always said no pain, no gain. And it sounds like such a meathead comment, but the reality is no pain, no gain. It's a fact. Like, so I push it to the limits as far as I can, knowing that I'm going to get, you know, my hands smacked at times, knowing that I'm going to see how every individual and everybody collectively gets together and makes it successful. You know, and you see some really great people that come out of that.
Yeah. So you're doing a lot of work with like mentorship too. Tell me what it means to you to, I'm assuming that you've been mentored and that you are doing mentoring. What do you see as a good relationship there as far as what makes a good mentor, what makes a good mentee, and you know, how that relationship works?
Absolutely. And for the record, I'm always being mentored myself too. It never ends. There's always people you can learn from. And there's people that you talk to directly that mentor you. And then there's things that you read and you repurpose in yourself and you embody in yourself from watching other people and how they act, their actions and whatnot. So I have several mentors that I work with today, and I try to pick them from various readings of life, you know, whether it be a personal or a business, and also based off even gender and industry. Because I, you can read all the books you want. You can go to college for as long as you want. You can develop that intellect. But then there's the other half, which is the wisdom, which is makes you more worldly. If you don't have both, you kind of, you're one dimensional, you know, and you learn tactics, but you don't learn application. I think that's always where the trade-off is, you know? So I try to be as submerged as I can. Now, as far as you asked the question about mentees, if you want me to mentor you, I'm going to do it on my own free time. Even for our employees, I do it on the weekend.
Okay.
Your time and my time. This is about your personal development. There's no distractions. There's nobody can bother us. But you're also going to have to earn that, you know, because I don't want to just pick up people. I don't want to adopt stray dogs for the sake of stray dogs. You know, I want people that want to be involved in my family and my fold and have some sort of idea that they want to succeed and excel. They may not know what that looks like.
Sure.
But, you know, they know they want it, you know, that's one thing. But as far as being a good mentor, one thing I think people, and I've seen this happen with other people that mentor people, sometimes I think that they have a checkbox of specific things that they have to be like, I'm going to help you with, you know, PowerPoint presentations. I'm going to help you with, you know, I'm going to help you with how to do analytics and stuff. You know, that's great. You should help them with those things, right? If you can help them to show them a strategy, you make it easier. But it starts with the inside, the core values of you. And also what I find to be the problem when you do that is if I asked you how people see you today and perceive you, you may have a couple ideas because of what you do now, people talk to you. But if you weren't doing this, you'd be surprised. Some people don't have an idea how the people around them perceive them, you know?
Right.
And it's such a problem because you see a lot of negativity out of people because we're our own worst critic. We're always our hardest critic. Sure. So the first thing I have my mentees do is they have to talk to three people. They have to talk to a professional contact, a personal contact, whether it be family or friend, and then a person you're kind of an acquaintance with.
Okay.
And they have to ask them, how do you see me? What do you like about me? What do you dislike about me? What do you think I can improve on? And they have to come back to me with that. That's a homework assignment from day one.
Right. Well, that's got to be such an enlightening experience because, you know, I've talked about the Joe Harry window on the show before where there's that side of you, which is things that you know about yourself. But then there's the other part that is things that others know about you and kind of opening yourself up to see what is it that people, that other people see. I'm just curious, what kind of feedback are they getting when they're asking people like, what is it that you don't like about me? Because people typically don't like to give negative feedback.
Right. No. But that's why you pick people from different categories, right? Because you know, you're going to get, because your brother will be like, Rob, you know what? You talk way too much, dude. Can you please stop talking? You know, you'll right. get that at least, you know, and that's typically the negative feedback, which is surprising, has been, I don't know why you're so unsure of yourself. I wish you had more confidence. Mm. I also have heard, please stop talking so much.
Right.
but it's never anything like, it's not as harsh as they believed that okay. it was, you know, but the one other thing I always have them ask after, then I make them go back. This is the trick is I make them ask those questions. And then when they bring back their feedback to me and they talk to me about it, we focus on what they got, the positives, because that's, I'd rather focus on the positive things. And, you know, because if you focus on the negatives, they become, it's habitual. Get rid of it. There's okay. no sense in it. There's no time for that. That's noise. Let's move to the progress. But then I say, now go back to them and ask them for a specific example of why they didn't like you or what they thought was bad about you. Give a specific example on the bad one and on the good one. And then that way, because, yeah, I can talk theoretically to you. But until I give you an example like, hey, Rob, I didn't really like when you did this. Mm-hmm. Now you have the ability to actually take that in because it's a specific event. And you know not to make to have that mistake again. And then on the other side, positive too. Same rules apply.
Right. Okay. So I would kind of take this framework that you've developed and link it back to what you were talking about with that, the difference between academic and the applied, mm-hmm. right? Because this has been, you know, I've got a master's degree in psychology, so I went to a ton of school and I have that, but there's something about the world of academia in which it's detached from the, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but like it's detached from the real world. Okay.
Yes.
They exist in an isolated environment.
And, they're in a bubble.
And so, yes, you can learn a lot from that. But then once you get out of school and you get into the business world, the applied world, the active world, you're learning things from a whole different perspective. And
yep.
and so as a result of that, you know, you've got something different going on where what you're talking about is the theoretical and the practical, where you're saying, mm-hmm. okay, tell me why you know, tell me what is it about me that, you know, you don't like, but then you take that from a theoretical to say, can you give me an example? And now you've got both of those together. And the next time that you're in an experience, you're not thinking, okay, is this part of the theory? You're like, oh, this is exactly like that thing that they said, where, you know, Rob, that whenever that the night that we were sitting at the dinner table and you told 15 dad jokes right in a row, like that just really got us. And we hated that kid. And I'm like, okay, you know, here I go. I'm on dad joke number 5 already.
Here it's comes God. 18 now. 15 right. bothered you. Wait till I get to 25.
Right.
So I can do this all day.
Yeah. I'm a dad. I'm good at this. And, you know, I'm not saying that the jokes are good. The jokes are bad. That's by definition, that's what a dad joke is.
Which makes them good. Yeah. That's, again, we have few. Remember, being a father, I've been a father since I was 18 years old.
Okay.
So that's all I have for my enjoyment of this. Like, that's the only thing I have on them, especially like my older daughters. I can't ground them.
Right.
They're too old. So now I just got to annoy them. That's like, and it's my joy. It's a sinful pleasure of mine to annoy them to know. And Diana, if she has not told you, she will tell you, I will do everything in my power to make her be annoyed with me just so, and then she, and then I make her love me afterwards. Like, I'm like, all right, give me a hug. Let's go. And then she's still annoyed, but I love it. I think it's like her friends come around. It's like game on.
Right. My niece talks about this. Her dad, she had a, you know, her guy friend came over to the house for the very first time and her dad was there and he is wearing like dad clothes. He's got on the dad outfit. He's doing the dad thing. And she is just absolutely mortified. But this guy happened to be a basketball player and they end up on at the basketball hoop in the backyard. And her dad comes out and starts shooting. And this guy's like, holy smokes, your dad's really good at basketball. And she said like the script flipped that quickly. And she's like, oh yeah, that's my dad right there. Right. You know?
Yeah. Now she's proud. Now she's like, that's my dad. Yeah, he's awesome.
That's it. I told you. Right. So
that's impressive.
Totally agree with that. I guess in what you're talking about, you are all about building relationships, whether it's building relationships with your kids, building relationships with your mentors and mentees, or building relationships in business. Can you talk a little bit about relationship building in the business arena? Because I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, they don't see that as much as you can see it easily in your family and among your friends.
No, I spent many years in sales after the Army, and I would say I'm a salesperson. And then I came to the point where I was like, you know what? I'm not. I'm into building relationships, and building a relationship is very different. And I don't build relationships for the sake of, back to selfless service. I don't build relationships for the sake of me reaping a benefit on day one and getting ROI. I might put, you know, if I quantified my time, maybe I invested $10,000 into becoming your friend. Based off sheer time.
Sure.
I don't know. Right. And I may get a cup of coffee out of it from you at the end of the day. Okay. So we're talking 10,000. Well, I'll probably have to buy a really expensive one at Starbucks just so I can make something back. Right. So it's not as bad. No, but the fact is I don't expect to see you give me something. Okay. First, but I expect to get to know you to a point that I know that I can help you in one form or fashion, whether it's me helping you directly with something and selling to you, or here is so-and-so that can work with you. You need it's kind of like, you might use a mechanic that your dad told you, this is the best mechanic. This is the best plumber. You know, it's kind of like that, but building relationships is so crucial for the success of your business, because the more friends you have in that regard, and I'm not saying they're your best friends, because we know they're not.
Right.
You have your group of best friends, but these are your acquaintances that trust and respect you and can rely on you and will vouch for you. The it's a law of large numbers. If I know a million people, chances are I'm probably gonna have a successful business.
Sure.
If a million people are saying, hey, Sean's like really good, you should deal with him. He's knowledgeable, he's professional, he has integrity. You know, ethically speaking, there's never a problem. You know, all of a sudden, that's a million people speaking for me. And they're not going to just do it for no reason. We know that.
Right.
Because they also want ROI. So again, we're all here to help each other. Yeah. I go to many conferences, and the first conference I ever went to, I went by myself and I didn't even know what I was supposed to do.
Right.
I just showed my boss, the CEO of the company, was like, hey, you're going to go to Las Vegas for this conference. And I'm like, okay. And do what? He goes, we don't have a booth. You're just going to walk around. Here's some pamphlets, hand them out. I'm like, to who?
Right.
I've been on the job for like 2 months. I had this much knowledge of what I was even saying. So I basically just said, you know what? I'm not even going to talk about too much. I'm going to give a high level explanation. If people ask us what we do, I'm going to tell them this is what we do, but I'm going to spend more time just getting to know them and whoever it is. I'll talk to everybody and anybody about anything, because there's so many great stories anyway.
Right.
Even if it's not professional, it's very enlightening. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. And in some ways you're selling yourself as an individual, and you're, as you build that relationship, then that progresses into when they're looking for something and saying, oh, I need this. I like Sean, and we have a great relationship, and I like to work with him for that. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, agreed. I didn't do it on it. Honestly, I was always the guy in the background. Like I said, when I was doing just sales, I was always the guy waiting to talk to the prospects. I never put myself out there. I tried to keep everything pretty tight because I have processes that have to go in my mind, regardless of your process, I have things I must do. And that's the only thing about salespeople, they're usually creatures of habit. But it wasn't until later that I realized that there's personal brands and you have to build your personal brand, and your personal brand should always be a good person, regardless of anything else.
Yeah. All right. You have got a tremendous attitude. Talk to me about how you developed this attitude. And like, is this something you were born with? Is this something that has come over the course of time? Like, how did that all work out for you?
I don't know that I always had an awesome attitude, of course. I think we've all had our lulls in life. We grew up very, very poor, very, very, very poor family, single mother. And at one point there, my aunt and her four daughters and the oldest daughter had a child. They all moved in with us when I was about 9 years old. So there were like 12 of us in a 2-bedroom, 1-floor apartment.
Wow.
But I was 9. So I was like, wow, we all can play wiffle ball and it tag. It's going to be amazing. You know? And I watched them, the women in our lives, which is very ironic since I have four daughters and about to have my second granddaughter. But the women in my family have always been very strong and going through stuff and never once sweat, never said it to us. Like my mother never led on to stress. Right. She never did any of that, you know? So not that she wasn't stressed, because obviously she was, but she also, and not that she just hit it and was like away from us. She didn't close herself off to us. If anything, she was more nurturing as a result of it. I think she was more appreciative. I learned young, and you don't know you're poor when you're young, by the way. You don't know until you're older.
Yes. So agree.
You don't know any of that. So once I learned that, and I had Diana when I was 18 years old, and that year was a pretty crazy year. I joined the Army that year. I joined the Army for that reason. I was like, I have to turn, because I was not a great student. That wasn't me. I disliked going to school. Like I'm more of a, like, back to the application of life. Mm-hmm. I'm more jump first, ask second kind of thing, you know, which is not always best.
Right.
So then once I went to the Army, very, very, very eye-opening experiences, really being deployed for various deployments and being in third world countries, man, it could always be worse.
Right.
No matter how bad my day is, I have seen people that have had to struggle through way harder hardships than I ever could imagine. And that is perspective. And because you can't control events.
Right.
I mean, believe in God or believe in the greater being or whatever you believe in, life happens and you have no control over 99.99% of any of it. You know, I mean, like you were in a car accident.
Yeah.
You didn't pick that. It's like, I'm going to go outside and get in a car. That's not the case. You can't control that. So even with you, your attitude, I mean, my goodness. You're positive. It's great to feed off of that, actually. So I'm glad I'm talking to you about it. But that's lifelong lesson, is the only thing you can really control is your attitude.
No, and I think that there are two things that I want to highlight from what you said. Number one, on what you just said, mm-hmm. and that is what happens in the world it has no value content to it, has no value assignment to it. It's how you react to it that gives the value to what happens. The other thing is, you talked about growing up being poor, but you were rich in relationships, even though you were poor monetarily, and you come out of that with the benefit of, you know, understanding how important relationships are. I think about, there are a lot of families where they are growing up and they are rich financially, but they are poor on the relationship side of things, mm-hmm. and how sad that is. And I would actually say that they are coming out in a much more difficult growing place than
absolutely.
You and I did, who may have grown up with less financially, but more on the relationship side.
And it's awesome though, but how does it help you with your children later? Like my daughters, whether it's Diana, Sydney, Courtney, or Sophia, they have no choice in knowing that I'm going to smother them. Like it doesn't matter. There's certain rules in life that they have to live by, which is, when you see me for the first time today, a hug and a kiss. When you're leaving, a hug and a kiss. That's it. If you're annoyed with me, it doesn't matter. Hug and a kiss. Doesn't matter. Because you forget and you don't show that. And it's reciprocated when you feel it, because I mean, first off, as a parent, it is our responsibility to make our children feel welcomed into the world.
Sure.
We're the first ones.
Yep.
You know, we know there's outside influences. We know they're not going to feel welcome in all groups, but it's our job to make them feel welcomed and institute this that life is good and you're okay and you're safe with me, period. And they should feel welcomed and loved always. Not that it's easy all the time. Let's be honest. It's not easy all the time because you have three daughters, you know.
Definitely it's not easy to make sure that your kids, well, in some ways it is and in some ways it isn't, but making sure that your kids know there is a place where you are safe, you are loved, and you can come here anytime and feel safe and loved no matter what's going on in your life. So that's awesome. Listen, Sean, I could probably talk to you for another, a couple hours, but
days.
Yeah. Listen, if people are looking to, what do you have to plug? If people are looking to get a hold of you.
Sure. I mean, I have nothing to plug. Specifically, I came on because I wanted to share stuff. I don't have a selfish motivation other than I enjoy this kind of conversation. So this is like a highlight of my day. Nothing to plug really. The company is OIT VoIP. If you guys are working and need business phone solutions, that's what we do. I work with a lot of MSPs that partner with us. I help them with their business plans. I help them to grow their own businesses. That's my whole function there. However, really, feel free if you want to look us up. We do have a YouTube channel for OIT VoIP, but we have a ton of stuff on there. We create content on a regular basis, but really, no, I don't have anything really to plug.
Okay.
I know I've watched other shows. I know they do, but I'm not in this for anything more than, hey, I hope I help somebody. And if I did, send me an email and be like, dude, that was awesome. Thank you so much. And my email is sean@oit.co by all means, or find me on LinkedIn.
I'll put links to all that down in the show notes so that awesome. People can get a hold of you. Wonderful. Hey, you've been fantastic, Sean. It is time for three questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
All right. If you could choose any one celebrity to sit down for a coffee at Starbucks with, or you have to get the expensive coffee at Starbucks. Who's the celebrity that you are picking to have a cup of coffee with?
Magic Johnson.
And what part of what is it about Magic that says that's the guy I want to talk to?
Right. So, I mean, I remember growing up, and we obviously don't have a basketball team here. And my brother is 7 years older than me. He loved the Celtics, and just because of the sibling rivalry, I was like, well, I gotta like the Lakers, because it was that. And so I just started watching it, and I watched them play, and it was amazing watching them play, first off. If you've never had a chance to watch them, because he was the ultimate team player, but he still scored a lot of points, had great assists. He made magical things happen. I mean, he was just great, right? So that's one thing. So, and on and off the court, you never really heard anything negative about him either. So he was like, he was like one of my first heroes that I looked at, but I had the privilege of, I was at a conference and he was the keynote speaker.
Okay.
And this was just a handful of years ago. So this is long after his NBA career. And I learned far more about him. He was one of the first owners of Starbucks franchises, but Starbucks, not Seattle's Best, because they only franchise Seattle's Best from Starbucks.
Okay.
So he was the first person they ever allowed to be like an actual franchise owner of the actual name Starbucks.
Right.
Of the brand Starbucks. And he came to them with a business plan that they never thought about, saying, we need to put your stores in urban areas, more urban. Okay. Now, and by urban, I mean inner city almost, right? Not in the areas like you and I, there's on McKnight Road, which is like a very an upper scale area. He was the first one, and they actually accepted it. Obviously, him being Magic Johnson probably helped him, it's a brand,
right?
But And he ended up owning several hundred stores within urban areas because he talked about their disposable income that they weren't spending because they didn't have these types of things there.
Right.
So, after he talked about it, and just the way he speaks is phenomenal. Sure. And I was like, and then I had a larger man crush at that point on him.
Nice. Okay. Cool. All right. Do you speak more than one language?
Muy poquito.
Got a little bit of Spanish in there.
Sí, Espanol, but very little of it because one of my deployments was in Central America.
Okay.
So I was in Guatemala. And when you're amongst the group, you have to assimilate to some degree, especially in some of these countries that have zero English speaking skills at all.
All right. Last question for you. Pasta salad. Should pasta only be served warm with sauce on it? Or is it okay to make pasta into a cold salad that's a side dish for a summer picnic?
So I'm Italian, Irish, and German. So all of the above is acceptable because the Italians will say, no, that's insane, right? It has to be warm with a good red sauce, and even not, and not with meat sauce. You have to make meatballs. But on the German Irish side, it's kind of like no rules barred kind of thing. No rules barred. It's yeah. So pasta salad, I just had some yesterday, as a matter of fact.
There you go. Wonderful. All right, Sean, thanks so much for being on the show. It's been wonderful. I can see why Diana loves you and it was a privilege to have you on. For all my listeners, thank you for being with us today. This has been just a great experience. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have. I will remind you, as always, that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.